Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. The Dream Team is back together. I'm joined with David J. McCutcheon, as always. I'm Kenny McIntosh. Hi David, how are you?
I didn't know that we were the Dream Team. I always thought that we were like some sort of Harvey Weinstein nightmare scenario, you know? Like
for a second, I was like, where are you going with this Harvey Weinstein reference?
He lays his head down to go to sleep, and we just appear in his nightmares, beating the shit out of him. So, I mean, maybe that's the dream for some of our more liberal listeners, right?
Maybe. I apologize for not being here last week. It's not been the best run of luck, really, so far in 2018 for me, because I started off the year with my friend spilling vodka over my laptop. I'm apparently getting the laptop back tomorrow, so hopefully all normal service should resume.
Kenny, I didn't know that you were friends with those prostitutes.
I don't even know what he means yet, but I'm 99% positive I know what it means, so I'm going to gloss past it. But what I will say is that I got the cold the other day, which is great, but luckily it's happened now, so I can kind of hopefully get out of the way before the tour. I luckily have a friend who is a pharmacist, so he was able to just prescribe me some drugs.
Oh, God, the dream. So, Kenny, you need to get me some of those opioids I hear so much about. Come on now, be my drug dealer.
I'll get you some for April. explaining them through customs. but, you know, the thing is, the guy who spilled the vodka on my laptop, my friend Ollie, and you can get him on Twitter at OLYOSSO, that's Ollie Oso, he is the reason why Fiona McIntosh has not appeared on this podcast yet.
Oh, bullshit. But I refuse to let you drag Ollie's good name through the mud.
Good name?
Yes, he is a wonderful human being, and how dare you even try to pin all of this, all of your drunken sexcapades that
listen, I didn't even get to tell my New Year's story. I'm going to tell that right now. Okay, fair enough. We're here. So it's New Year's, and I'm just going to not say names of who was there. There was four of us there, me and someone else who's maybe already come up in conversation. I'm not going to say who, but anyway, there's four of us, and we're all like, okay, we're going to go out to this burlesque night, it's all good. And then one of my friends thought it was a good idea to bring, how the fuck do you word this? Remember Barry Manilow used to sing that song Mandy?
Sure, yeah, of course.
So, my friend brought some of that. And we're like, oh, sure, okay, it's New Year's. Why not? Party on. And it goes in our drink. And what I was told was, it's going to taste great. It did not taste great. It tasted exactly like you would imagine it would taste in an alcoholic drink. So we downed that. Now, my friend who's come along, and she's like in her mid-30s, she doesn't tend to really go too crazy. I mean, she does tan a bottle of wine at every opportunity, but you know. So she indulges in this, and then we indulge one more time before we go out. And I'm fine. Like, I was okay. So was a couple of my friends. But my friend who had not really indulged was not quite as okay as the rest of us. And she, we got to the bells, and it was all good, and then we were kind of like hanging around waiting for a drink after the bells, and I said, listen, you stand here and I'll go and get us a drink, and all you need to do is stand against this table. You even have something to lean on. And she's like, okay, that's fine, no problem, I'm absolutely fine. And I got 6 inches away from her, and she planted her face right on the ground. She just fell flat on her face, like a sack of shit.
Oh, and she was the poor lass.
She was dressed in like a short sequin dress. She looked like she'd been like, you know, auditioning for a sexy Wheel of Fortune, and then just like collapsed through it with a stroke. So I have to look after her because these other people have fed her some things. So then they come back and I go, you're taking care of her. I'm not dealing with this. This was your fault. You brought Barry Manilow's song out for the night. I'm not taking anything to do with it. So then my friend ends up inadvertently doing a forward roll when she falls over, which I was kind of impressed at, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, that actually sounds like something that you would see at a fucking indie show or something, right?
Yeah, she was basically Leo Rush, but not trying to be a dick. So so then we decide that it's time for her to go home. It's like 2 a.m. We're like, she's done. She is just, she's done. So I'm like, right, are you ready? Are you ready to go? And she's like, yeah, it's just, I can't find my purse. I was like, for fuck's sake.
Oh,
so I go to the cloakroom of the place thinking, well, if I go to the cloakroom, they might somebody might have handed it in and somebody had handed in the purse. So I got the purse. I was like, hey, great. I go and give her the purse. I was like, there you go. We're all good. And she leaves. I put her in a taxi. I take her to the taxi. I put her inside. I thought, my job is done. So then I go back upstairs to find the other two reprobates. And they've fucked off, right? So not only have they made my friend very inebriated, which I need to look after, then they fucked off, so I need to look around for them for about 10 minutes. And I find them out in the smoking area just having a whale of a time. And I was just done by this point. So I was like, I'm going home.
Of course.
I'm going home.
You've done your babysitting. You are ready for bed at this point.
Yeah, I'm good. So I go to go home. And then like I'm getting this phone call, and I think it's my friend's girlfriend. So I'm just like, I'm not answering, because this is him just trying to make it up to me. Well, he has to make more up later on, but we'll get to that in a second. So I'm walking home, and then I finally answer this fucking phone, and it's my friend who I'd put in a taxi home, phoning me from her mum's phone. And I was like, why are you calling me? And she was like,
what?
I've got home, and I've lost my purse and my phone.
What? And I was like, but in the taxi?
So I said, look, I'll phone the Uber, because you must have left it in the taxi. And the Uber guy's like, no, there's nothing in the taxi, I promise you. I was like, okay. So then, by the time I'm called back, my friend has said, and this is my favourite line. So she's like, out her face on various things. But she finds, she wants to tell me how somebody had come to her front door and handed in the purse. So she must have dropped it, you know, on the way up to her flat.
Yes, of course.
But the best description that she could give of this gentleman was, this lovely young refugee man handed in my purse. This lovely young refugee man. How is he a refugee? Anyway. So.
Oh, Tom Petty, no.
So then, like, bear in mind, she's in her mid-30s. It's been a bit of a tragic evening for her. At least she's went out and had a story. And
this is like, for sure.
This is like 2:40. The club shuts at 3.
And also though, no worse for wear. She made it home. She has her purse.
Well, according to her, she was absolutely blitzed. And then as soon as she got home and realized she'd missed everything, she sobered up in a heartbeat because she realized she had to like take charge and get her stuff back.
Right.
So I phoned her phone, and then somebody answers it, and I'm like, hello. And they're like, hi, this is the cloakroom of the club. I was like, okay. Can my friend come pick up her phone now? And they were like, yeah, but just to let you know, if she doesn't get here by 3, we're shut for the next 2 days.
Oh.
Now, my friend has also started pumping somebody recently, so she's wanting to continue the WhatsApp messages with her pump. So,
if she doesn't get this
phone back, what's he going to think if she's not messaging back for 2 days? So, anyway, she has this decision to make, which is either does she wait and try and retain some dignity, or... At 2:40 in the morning, does she get her mother to chaperone her in a cab to the club to retrieve her phone?
Oh, you gotta do the chaperoning with the ma. You gotta do it.
She chaperoned with her mom to get the phone.
Fuck yeah, good decision. Good decision. You gotta do that. You gotta. Moms are superheroes.
So she ended the night all good, right? Like in the end, she ended. Now I would have ended the night all good had my friends not decided to come home to my house. Not go home to theirs, but they wanted to, in their words, we didn't want to leave the night on a bad note. So instead, he came back, poured himself a vodka, spilled it on my laptop, and it's 10 fucking days later, and I've still not got it back.
You could
perhaps infer who was involved in any of that event, and if you do, you can go to his Twitter page and abuse him.
Poor Ollie. I feel like you're pinning all of this on him. I feel like it was you, actually, Kenny. Like, if we were to take the slides and go back in time and review it all, it'd be like one of those movies to where it's presented one way, but then all of a sudden they rewind the track and they show what actually happened. I feel like that you're altering history here, Kenny. I feel like it was you who said, no, Ollie, please, come back to my place. I insist.
Have you met me?
And then you handed him the vodka and you said, go willy-nilly with this. Come on, Ollie, you can do that. Come on now, buddy. let's have a good time. And then he got a little tipsy and spilt it over, and then you just started wagging your finger at him like a horrible friend.
I was actually completely calm at the time, because I thought the laptop was fine. I was like, oh, I'll be fine, don't worry. Now, in his defense, I am now recording on his iMac, which he brought over to let me borrow.
What a nice person. Even though it wasn't his fault to begin with, he's still lending you things to make you feel better. That is what we call a true friend.
I think you and him had gotten better than I thought. Anyway, so before we talk about Raw, that's... And I'm hoping that I've left enough vagueness in that story so that no authorities can get involved. But
of course, yes.
And we will, of course, close this week's show with Barry Manilow's version of Mandy, just so you really can understand what I'm trying to say. So before we talk about Raw, Wrestle Kingdom 12.
Yeah, jeez. Wrestle Kingdom.
So yeah. You want to talk about it a little bit before we talk about Raw?
Well, let me go ahead and plug this and say that anyone who is interested in hearing about my complete views on Wrestle Kingdom 12 can go to the Inside the Ropes Patreon page and pledge $5 to hear my complete, uncensored, unedited thoughts with, of course, the special co-host for the evening, the official third member of the Hollywood Elite. Yeah, we're getting a woman in on that. It is my wife, Valerie. So if you are interested in hearing Val talk for the first time, her opinions on professional wrestling, you can head over to our Patreon page, pledge $5 for the month, check it out, and check out some of the other stuff over there while you're at it. I'm sure that there will be enough to catch your eye to where you will want to pledge every month if you just give it a shot. So by all means, please do. Yeah, Kenny, Wrestle Kingdom. Totally awesome, right?
Yeah, it was a fun show. I've only seen like the top five matches, but I thought it was good. I thought Cody put in a decent performance.
I thought that was the best match of Cody Rhodes' career.
He definitely brought it. I think the thing about Cody is he's managing to get being a big match performer, which is something he didn't really have the chance to do before, so I think that's good.
Right. Something that we mentioned on the podcast is going overseas and working with these guys in other countries, it's sort of giving him a platform to go out and expand his horizons and learn how to work a style that isn't just WWE style, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And also announced today, the All In show, September 1st this year, Cody and the Bucks have announced the date. There's a Twitter page, so I guess we'll find out soon where that show's going to be.
I'm hoping that Inside the Ropes can somehow appear for that. That would be pretty sweet, Kenny. My question for you is, when is the date? I have missed it.
September the 1st, 2018.
September the 1st. Could be a fun birthday trip, an excursion. It could, and now,
Cody did say to me on Twitter that I better be there, so maybe I better go. I don't know. Maybe we pack up the kids and make our way over there.
We might have to pack the children's up.
So what else? I also thought that the Suzuki Goto hair versus hair match was really fun. I enjoyed that.
Is Suzuki the scariest man alive or what?
I mean, I had to get him on a train in London.
What?
When I was at WCPW, they came over for the October Refuse to Lose show.
You have never told me this story. Why the fuck have you never told me this?
So it was Minoru Suzuki and Desperado, I think it was. So Minoru Suzuki's there, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, Minoru Suzuki!" And I'm like, so the first time everyone's like losing their shit, and I was like, "My god, why is everyone going so crazy for him?" Right? And people are like, "What do you mean you don't know who he is?" And I was like, "Of course I know who he is." But, like, I mean, he had a really bad stereotypical Japanese gimmick in 2004 in WWE, and all of a sudden people are raving about him. I thought it was Kenzo Suzuki. That's who I thought it was.
So
then I meet Minoru Suzuki, who speaks zero words of English.
Yes, and
Now, so what it reminded me of was when I was, like, 9 years old, my mum and I, with some family friends, were in Spain, and it was, like, 2 in the morning, and I really wanted a Coca-Cola, and I went down to, like, the night receptionist, who was this old man from Spain who did not speak a word of English. And when you're a child, you think if you shout the words,
yes,
they become clearer. So what I've realized in my adult life is that instead of shouting the words, I make up what I feel is accurate sign language to depict that, what I think
they... That's way better, though. That is way better.
So I'm like, hello, Minoru! And it's horrendous. And then, like, we need to rush for the train, so I'm trying to get them in the mindset of, like, we need to go now.
Yeah.
And then, I had to go to their room, their hotel room, and be like, 5 o'clock call time, is that cool? And they were like, huh? And I was like, five! Five! Just putting five fingers out in front of them.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
this
man could kill me with his bare hands. And I'm standing with an iron in my hand, because I need to go up and iron my shirt, because I obviously haven't prepared, while I tell this Japanese legendary wrestler with a mental haircut that I need to pick him up in 20 minutes and take him to the show. So that's my Minoru Suzuki story. Or Minoru Suzuki. I keep wanting to say Minoru, that's just the way but I know it's Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah.
Absolute sweetheart of a guy, to be fair.
Was he actually?
Yeah, lovely. Lovely guy. I mean, I don't know what the fuck he was saying, but he was lovely.
He was making fun of the way that you walk or something, probably. But, you know, I mean, but besides that, a hell of a guy, right?
I thought Tanahashi and Jay White was decent. I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was decent.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Not the match of the night, to say the least. Yeah.
Really happy that Ospreay won the four way. I thought him and Skrull put in great performances with Takahashi and Kushida. Was it?
Yeah. We were very distraught that Will Ospreay won, but I'm not a Will Ospreay fan. But I thought that he had the best performance that I've ever seen from him in this match.
And do you know he's now, I guess, IPW UK in the next couple of weeks. There's going to be a Will Ospreay versus Pete Dunne match, which means it's a New Japan champion versus a WWE champion.
Very fun, yeah. No, that's cool. Does Pete Dunne ever defend that damn thing?
Yeah, all the time.
Does he?
Because
over here in the States, we hear nothing about it. So it's like that title doesn't even exist.
Yeah, he'll defend it like Progress against Jack Gallagher, or like, I'm sure he defended ICW last summer. So let's go in a bit of a weird order. Let's do Okada Naito first. So
sure.
Going into, I knew the rough story. I'd seen the fall and rise of Naito, and then I've seen Okada's probably like the guy I've seen the most stuff from. Which, by the way, I don't know who put it on Facebook or something, but there was like an advert of him recently doing like a game thing with kids, which was the funniest thing ever.
I believe it was Ray Takumi, or one of our mods.
It was very funny. So Okada's facing Naito, and everybody seemed to think this was Naito's time. He needs to be the guy to win, and he doesn't, and Okada retains. So I guess the question I'm going to ask you, for people who don't watch New Japan, who are listening to this, can you maybe give us like a WWE comparison of who these two guys are, and like what, like Okada winning here and retaining, what would that be like if you were watching a WWE match with similar participants in terms of stature and fan reaction?
It's really tough to say, because they're very, it's not so much that the wrestling is different, but the audiences who partake in the wrestling are different. With Okada, he's been on top for over a year now, and he's been untouchable. He's been the champion, et cetera, et cetera. And Naito's actually won the IWGP Heavyweight Championship from Okada, believe it or not. But he quickly lost it back, like, in the rematch. So it's not like this would have been the crowning of him as champion, but it would have been the crowning of him as a top guy. You know, it's sort of like whenever Bray Wyatt won the title and then he quickly lost it at WrestleMania. He had the title, but it wasn't like he was a top guy. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been the crowning achievement, because with Wrestle Kingdom's main event, you know, I mean, Tanahashi was in the main event for a decade and he won practically every time. So, you know, this is it would be uncharted territory. There's no real comparison in the WWE, because frankly, there's nothing that's that prestigious in the WWE these days. For US fans, it would sort of be like whenever The Rock beat Steve Austin, I guess. That would be a decent, like, comparison to where it's like he finally got over the hump and he defeated his rival on the grandest stage of them all, you know, that sort of thing. But the key difference is Naito is 5, I believe it is, years older than Okada, even though Okada is much more accomplished. Naito's story in a nutshell is that he was supposed to be the guy and he failed miserably his first few times out. Think of it sort of like The Miz being pushed to the main event. No one took him seriously. They thought that he was a joke. So I guess in some weird way, because Naito is also a heel, but he's sort of like a tweener heel that gets a lot of cheers because he's so naturally charismatic. I guess it would sort of be like if The Miz were booked very heavily for 9 months leading up to the main event picture, and he like won cleanly over guys that would be on Kenny Omega's level. So I guess that would be like he won cleanly over a Seth Rollins or something of that nature, another guy who's sort of a tweener almost, and built up to fight Roman Reigns in terms of stature, not work rate or crowd reaction or anything, but in terms of stature, that's Okada, is Roman Reigns. And just imagine Roman's had the championship for over a year and you're really wanting Miz to win it, and then Roman just beats him clean in the middle, 1, 2, 3. That would be kind of how it is. And the crowd was a little deflated for a Japanese crowd. A lot of Naito fans went for the exits immediately. And it was not a pretty scene. I feel like there's this counterculture that could really take shape and shift the landscape of New Japan. But I almost feel like they got to strike while the iron's hot. Because with this, New Japan, I'm going to make a bold prediction here. New Japan won't be as popular as it is right now next year. I think they've hit their peak.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, I do. And
Is Okada not got a record coming up in maybe June or something? Like longest running champ if he gets to like a certain point? Is it like Dominion?
I want to say he's already surpassed that, but I could be incorrect on that. My history of New Japan is not up to date. I only keep up with the current product, admittedly. But with this, though, you know how finicky everyone is, Kenny. You see it all the time. This is just the way that things are. I made a comparison. It was either to Val on the podcast or off the podcast. But like, you can go and get PWG tickets now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's not like the product has gone down in quality at PWG. It's just the hype surrounding it. It has died out a bit. And everything has a shelf life. Every single thing, every performer, no matter how good, it does not matter. You know, you've got musicians that come out with amazing music all the time. And even though everything they touch is gold, nowadays people are less inclined to buy their albums. Why? Because everything has a shelf life. That's just the nature of life. So with New Japan, especially with wrestling and any media that is absorbed by millennials in particular, what's in today is going to be out tomorrow. And I feel like in a year they won't top the house that they drew to the Tokyo Dome now. So that's my big, bold prediction on this, is that we have seen the height of New Japan's popularity. And traditionally, New Japan only runs with one top guy. It's why Shinsuke Nakamura left New Japan, because he knew he would never be the top guy over Tanahashi, and he saw the crowning of Okada. So he left New Japan to come to America so he could work a less strong style to, you know, take less bumps on his bump card. And also, so he would have a chance to be a international star, because he knew he would never be the top one or top two even stars of New Japan from that point on. And so traditionally, New Japan crowns one guy and they stick with one guy, as to where American fans are used to numerous guys. You don't think of the Attitude Era as the Stone Cold Era, where only Stone Cold was the number one guy in the WWE. Because The Rock was the number one guy in the WWE for a while. Shawn Michaels was the number one guy in the WWE for a while. I wouldn't say Triple H or Mankind were, but they were certainly on the periphery. They were where Naito is right now. So, yeah, it's we view it through a different lens, I guess, Kenny, is the best way to put it. And so there's that, like, clash of cultures. And they had a chance to build another star here and expand their worldview, and I feel like they failed in that regard. But you it's can funny. Catch more of it on Patreon.
Yeah, it's funny because I think this is the first time that I've actually seen people who like New Japan a little bit disappointed. Usually people seem to be, no matter what the result is, people seem to be really into it. I enjoyed the match. I kind of wanted Naito to win from my sort of very limited knowledge of it, but...
I feel like they're going to put the belt on him this year, but it's
is
sort
it too
of
little,
like,
too late? Should it have been him now?
It's sort of like
it's like when Seth Rollins beat Triple H at WrestleMania this year, and I'm only using that comparison because I had WrestleMania on the background today. And even though Seth Rollins beat him, he beat him in a 30-minute match that went on too long with a storyline that went on about 6 months longer than it should have.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter as much because...
It's overboiling the pasta. The pasta is no longer al dente.
Exactly. And it's funny because when I watched it, it was probably always going to be the fact that Jericho Omega was always going to be my favorite. It was just, you know, the nature of the beast. I know Jericho's stuff a lot more. And I was surprised that that was their favorite match or they thought that it stole the show. But I thought Jericho Omega was fantastic. And what I was glad about it was he didn't go in there and try and have a 5-star match because that's not what he's there to do. He's 47 years old. But he went in and told a story. And when he put the walls of Jericho on the referee's son, oh my God. I mean, it was so good.
I know that Mel is a big Red Shoes fan. We are a very pro Red Shoes household. We love Red Shoes, the referee. So seeing his son put in the balls of Jericho. One of the reasons that Jericho is so brilliant is that he's a heel and he doesn't try to be a baby face. He doesn't try to be cool. He doesn't Triple H it up, if I may use that expression. He wants to be hated, as evident by him going after Naito after Wrestle Kingdom, you know? So, but yeah, this, and I will correct you on that, by the way. A 5-star match can be 5 stars without all of the flippy doodle shit that made Omega and Okada so great and all the strong style that made those so great. Cause I feel like these guys came really close to a 5-star match here in my personal grading opinion. And that's because they told an excellent story. And really, it's sort of like different genres of music, Kenny. You can listen to a great pop song and you can go, that is like the perfect pop song for the radio. And then you can listen to some killer heavy metal and you can just go, man, this is an awesome killer heavy metal song. This is one of the greatest heavy metal songs I've ever heard. And you're right in both instances because both of those things can be the best of their genres. And I feel like this is the best of that genre.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think, I mean, I'll be interested because I think it must be later today or tomorrow when Dave Meltzer's star ratings come out for this match. I'll be intrigued to see what he gives it because it doesn't seem like it would fit his usual criteria of a 5-star match. But I'm with you. I thought the story was excellent, and I'm glad Jericho's sticking around for a little while because he seems rejuvenated. He seems kind of inspired, and I think he's doing great stuff, and I really enjoyed it.
I do have to ask you, what'd you think of the unprotected hair chair shots to the head?
I'm not crazy about them, but it didn't detract me from it. Like, I think it's one of those things, if the guys are making that decision and they both want to do it, as long as it's not, horrendously in my face, I can kind of look past it. But it's not, I would prefer not to see it if I'm honest.
If I'm going to be perfectly honest, and this is going to probably get me some nuclear heat, I thought that they added so much to the match.
I think blood adds a lot to matches. And, you know, some people say, oh, you know, you shouldn't have blood in wrestling. It's like, but you can't punch someone in the face or put them against a cell and grate their face, and it's fine. That's so hokey.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. This match, I said it on the Patreon podcast, so I won't give too much away because really, though, people are going to want that Patreon podcast for my better half speaking for the first time. But it reminded me of an old ECW TV title match with the chair shots and the violence, but also the excellent work and the great psychology That's what it reminded me of. And that is my favorite ECW. You give me Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam and ECW for the TV title, I'm all in. And that's what this was. And this is the first time I've seen wrestling in, since ECW shuttered its doors, to where I've made that comparison. And that's the highest compliment I can give this match.
Interestingly enough, Jericho was on Busted Open Radio today, and he said that he's looking to get a Brock Lesnar schedule with New Japan if it works out, which is interesting because it went from being, you know, I'm a WWE guy. I'm intrigued by the time like he comes over. I'm intrigued by the next time that I speak to him, see where everything lies.
Yes.
So I almost gave stuff away there. Anyway, so Raw. Let's talk about Raw. I thought Raw was a decent show overall this week. I was intrigued. They set a lot of stuff up for Raw 25 and the Rumble. So let's get into it. So we open up with Roman Reigns coming out. He's kind of saying, you know, he's here. He was fighting for Dean Ambrose last week, and then Jason Jordan comes out, and Jordan tries to fist pump him, and it was just the greatest thing ever. Like,
It's funny because like Alvarez and Meltzer, they were talking about how Jason Jordan looked like a geek here, and I'm like, that's kind of the point, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't like. I know that Alvarez in particular has had a lot of problems with Jordan's run, but I feel like I'm watching it and I completely get what they're going for, and I think it's good.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, I'm 110% with you on that. No, for real, I don't get how people don't get it. To me, it's very obvious, you know, the writing's on the wall. It's very good, though. I am a huge fan of this. It's totally clicking for me.
Yeah, I think Jordan's doing great. And then Seth comes out, obviously, and you know, Jordan says he's in the Champions Club, and they're just, like, ashamed to be around him. And then Balor comes out with Gallows and Anderson, so it appears they are now a thing. They are the Balor Club together. And you know, basically, it all ends up that Kurt Angle comes out and makes a six-man tag for the main event. What do you make of, I guess, the idea that Jordan is attempting to be pals with Rollins and Reigns and they just can't stand him, and the Balor Club being a thing permanently?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Kenny, what was my number one complaint when it came to Finn Balor? Do you remember?
You thought he was too in shape for your liking.
Well, I mean, you know, he has to get on my level with those abs. However, I feel like my abs ate his abs, and that's just why you can't see mine. So, but yeah.
There's an image to send us all into an early grief.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You can mail me all of your therapy bills. But yeah, with Balor, the thing that I hated was he would always come out week after week and go, "This is Balor Club," or "I'm here in Memphis with Balor Club." And I'm like, what the fuck is Balor Club? There was no Balor Club. So who cared, right? But in this instance, now there is a Balor Club, Kenny. There's something tangible there. He can go, Balor Club is in Memphis. And I go, oh, he's talking about himself and Anderson and Gallows. Okay, that I understand that. It's put into layman's terms. It makes sense. So I love it. It gives something for all these guys to do. And judging by this, they're going to get a little bit of a push here, a little bit of a rub. So this is up and away, at least away from where we were going with Finn Balor before, which was nowhere. So I love this. And they're interacting with top guys, which is always a plus.
Yeah, I mean, it's much better than what was happening before, because before it just seemed like Balor was so aimless, and now he seems like he has a purpose.
Yes, yeah, no, 110%, Kenny. I'm all on board with that.
So, yeah, I thought the opening segment was really good. I'm glad that Gallows and Anderson are now with Balor. It gives them something to do, and I'm glad that all the pieces are kind of back in play, where Jordan seems to be going towards being a heel. Balor, Anderson, and Gallows are now together and can kind of do something. It was good stuff. We then got Sasha and Bayley versus Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. It went on for about 10 minutes and almost sent me into a coma. Any thoughts? So dull.
This was just brutal, man. I, like, maybe a low point for this episode of Raw. I'm so tired of these women just being thrust into these random makeshift tag teams. Kenny, we have enough women on the roster now that I feel like we could actually have a women's tag division. So instead of just every week we fucking throw these tag teams out, or these three-on-threes and all that bullshit, instead of doing that, just make a fucking women's tag division, put the tag titles on Sasha and Bayley, give them something to do for once, and fucking have them beat people like Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax, or the fucking whichever one. Is this Absolution or is this the Riot Squad? I forget, because they're the same fucking thing.
They are indeed. We also get clips about Mankind visiting Vince in hospital and Dr. Steve Austin attacking him. They talk about, you know...
Yes, when Raw was good.
Cody Graves said the Dudleys might appear, or the APA, which basically told you that those people are going to appear, obviously. Yeah. Then we got a promo backstage with Cedric Alexander and Goldust, and I realised... I think Cedric Alexander is the worst actor I have ever seen in my life. He is so... He can't even react to people. He can't even react to Goldust. He is atrocious. And people are like, oh, give Cedric Alexander a chance. No! He's bad. He's really fucking bad. And it's like, see if he can flip and stuff. There's a million fucking people that can do that.
The experiment is done. It pains me.
Ugh.
Yeah. Pains me to say it, because I love Cedric from a personal standpoint, from a professional standpoint. I think the guy's wonderful. But, ooh, man, you're not wrong.
Like, maybe I'm just being too harsh. Maybe, like, he'll pick up his groove. Nope.
If you can't perform alongside Goldust, who, like, anyone... Like, you give me Goldust, Kenny, I would be the most over person on Raw in that fucking quarter. I guarantee it. People would remember that segment and talk about it. Why? Because it's easy to go off of Goldust. It's very easy. He always results in memorable stuff. And this was very unmemorable. Yeah. Plus, can we please address the elephant in the room?
Sure.
Is Goldust actually a black guy? Like, what's going on with this? Does he only team with black guys? Come on now.
I like to think that Goldust was ahead of the curve with equality, and that we're all just too far behind.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, look at me.
I don't have any black friends in Glasgow. Goldust has only had black friends throughout his career. So who's the racist?
It's very fair. Yeah, I can't argue with logic like that. But, I mean, he will be in Titus Worldwide before the end of his career, right?
Well, yeah, probably. I still love, like, the idea. Cedric Alexander's partner is Goldust. Why?
No idea, buddy. No idea. I'm not entirely against it, but after this Monday, yeah, it's...
Up next, we had Woken Matt Hardy wrestling for the first time in WWE as piano music. He still has the Hardy Boys Titantron, which I don't know why. I feel they really need to get rid of that.
Yeah, what is with that? That's weird.
He faces off against Curt Hawkins. He's going to be in the Royal Rumble match. He said he's going to delete the 29 superstars in the Rumble of Royalty. And he wins the match in very quick order. The lights go out. They come back on. Bray Wyatt's there. And they stand and laugh at each other. God, I wish there was more to it than the laughing thing. I really do.
Yeah. It's not working for me, Kenny. It's not working for me, and I hate that.
Yeah, I just, like, he's so much better than the laughing. But yeah. I think that, even if it's a couple of weeks of this, I think that when he comes out of the Royal Rumble, he'll get such a huge reaction that hopefully... There's a plan post Royal Rumble for him to do something. But so far, it's like he can do so much more. He really can.
It's like they got hung up and they think the laughing is the gimmick, and it's not. It's a part of the gimmick. It's one part of like 30 different facets. And yeah, I don't know.
But hopefully, it's just a blip in the. in the radar, and it's gonna keep getting better.
God, I hope.
Elias comes out. He plays a song for the return of the Miz. The Miz comes out with Axel and Bo Dallas. Cuts promo about how he held the IC title for 200 days. Compares himself to Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, and the Ultimate Warrior, which, you know, you got to give the guy credit for, you know, gusto. they try and get, like, Dallas and Axel try and give him, like, the clothes from their back as presents and stuff. But he lets Roman Reigns know that he's let him borrow his IC title, and now Daddy's home, and he wants to be IC champ. What did you think of the Miz's return promo?
Pretty good stuff. I miss the Miz, so I never thought I'd say that. it was refreshing to see him back. Definitely a facet of the show that was lacking without him there. I feel like he got overshadowed in the show and the promo department though by somebody a little bit later on. But yeah, how about you? How'd you feel about this?
I thought he was good. He was good. He was a dick. He was arrogant. He was exactly what the Miz needed to be. So yeah, I thought it was good.
The Daddy's Home line, pretty good.
How did you feel about Balor, Anderson, and Gallows? When we were talking backstage, ended up bringing up Bad Luck Fale and Tama Tonga in their promo.
Yeah, cool stuff. I did enjoy that. Very, very fun. Have I ever told you about my Bad Luck Fale story? Whenever
no,
I met him,
I don't think so.
I saw Bad Luck Fale wrestle before he went to New Japan. He was over here touring with Tony Cassina and Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly, those guys. And so he was about half the size that he is now. He's really bulked up on that rice over there. But he was still just a very large brown man, right? So what do you do if you are a very large brown man across the indie scene throughout middle America, Kenny?
Put on face paint?
Close. You put on a Tarzan outfit and act like a savage. So he was out there eating a banana at ringside while making some horrible noises. And once he was done with the banana, he threw the banana peel at me, Kenny.
I suddenly have a newfound respect for the guy.
Yeah. So that is not the only time I've had fruit thrown at me in public. So, you know, all those tomatoes that have been thrown at me for all these years got nothing on the old banana peel. So, yeah, that is my brief Fale story. But, yeah, I like this little segment. This was cool. Some name drops for New Japan. I dug it.
Then we got Enzo versus Cedric Alexander for the Cruiserweight title. I just don't care. Cedric won by countout and then he fucking celebrated. Oh, what a fucking dumbass.
Yeah, Val was also like, why is he celebrating? Why is he happy about it? He just fucked over his title. Like, seriously,
I remember being
stupid.
8 years old and watching SummerSlam 93 and being like, why is Lex Luger celebrating? He didn't win the title. I knew then. I was 8.
And Lex Luger was never the same after that either. He was a fucking goof after that.
Mm-hmm.
Made him look permanently stupid. Enzo got busted open real bad here, though. What the fuck busted him open?
It was the kick, I think.
I thought the kick connected with the other side of his face, but I don't know. See, I was thinking after the kick, the bump he took where he landed directly on his face, I was thinking maybe that was the thing that busted him open. But
maybe it was. When they showed the replay, I thought the kick connected enough that maybe it was that. But
Yeah. I thought I took the brunt of it on the other side of his face, but I don't know. Either way, it looked awesome. He had a legit crimson mask. It looked like Ric Flair in the 80s. It was awesome.
We got a great promo for Raw 25. We're going to have the...
Also, we should mention they played up an injury angle during that, too.
They did.
Which will tie into a promo later on.
We'll talk about it later on when we get to that. We got a really fun promo for Raw 25, hyping we're going to get The Undertaker, DX, JR and King, The Dudleys, Ric Flair, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, The Bella Twins, The New Age Outlaws. This is Billy Gunn's first appearance since 2015 when he was let go.
One of these things is not like the other.
The APA and, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin in his first live appearance in the WWE since WrestleMania 32 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Long time coming. Will you be there live, Kenny?
I'll be in the Manhattan Center, so I think we get the Legends, but I think they might put Steve Austin in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think they will.
Because they're cunts. But See, to be honest, I'm not going to get too hung up on who's where. I'll just be kind of enjoying being in the city, and like, I don't care who's where. I want to go to the Manhattan Center. That's the reason I'm going.
That's Kenny. I was just about to say it doesn't matter. You could show me like fucking WCW in 2000 in the Manhattan Center, and I would just be tickled pink because I'd be watching wrestling in the Manhattan Center. Let alone WWE wrestling or WWF wrestling. Like, that would be the all-time... That's literally on my bucket list, Kenny. So I am very jealous that you're getting to go to the Manhattan Center. I love it. It's so good.
I paid $350 for a ticket.
In all honesty, I thought it would be more.
I think it would be more now, but it was like... Because they only sold 700 seats to people, and they sold it in 5 seconds.
I easily believe this. Easily.
But I'm excited. I'm excited about how they're going to configure it, how it's going to look. I'm just like, as someone who watched WWF when Raw started in 93, I just want to go to the Manhattan Center. So I'm excited. If Damian Demento turns up, I will cry with happiness, but I don't
know. Oh, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't it be great if The Undertaker came out of retirement, Kenny, and fought Damian Demento?
It would be, it's what dreams are made of.
It'd be great for fucking Damian Demento, I know that much.
I do wonder as well if Taker is going to close the show as he did in the first Raw.
He definitely should, yeah.
Depending what you're
doing. With him retiring and then coming back, yeah, I would say.
So then we get Kurt Angle on the phone with an unidentified woman saying that, you know, she's not been in the ring in years, she'd be great for the Royal Rumble. I'm hoping it's Trish Stratus.
Yeah, that's a safe bet, but man, oh man, you know who I want it to be.
I mean, it would be great if she wasn't dead and it was Sherry Martel, yeah, of course.
Well, yes, but of course I am talking about the number one ultimate bae of all time, my biggest crush in the world, Bull Nakano.
Ah, Bull Nakano, that would be cool.
Yes.
See, Aja Kong still wrestling, get her over.
Yeah, that's cool and all, but Bull Nakano.
That's true.
No, man.
That's true.
You don't understand the love that my heart, my brain, and my loins have for Miss Bull Nakano, the ultimate woman. I'm sorry, other women. You failed. You miserably failed because they broke the mold, Kenny. They broke the fucking mold whenever they made Bull Nakano.
I don't know if Andy's ever spiked their hair with coolerness, with more coolness than Bull Nakano.
Or sexiness.
Anyway, I was just remember how Lana pronounced her name, but anyway.
Val just came in here, by the way, during my Bull Nakano thing. Turn on the light, by the way, please. Val just came in here during my Bull Nakano monologue, and she's just staring at me, like, face to face within, like, half a foot of my face, giving me the most evil... menacing glare for saying that they broke the mold after they made Bull Nakano. I'm sorry, sweetie. We've been over this numerous times.
I love the idea that Val cosplays as Bull Nakano once a year. Oh, she disagrees. We had a Val breakthrough there.
I'm sleeping on the couch, you guys.
Val, I'd pump you over Bull Nakano any day. Don't worry.
Kenny said he'd pump you over Bull Nakano, so... There you go. Yeah.
So Kurt Angle's on the phone, Sheamus and Cesaro interrupt, and basically Sheamus and Cesaro are going to get the rematch at the Royal Rumble against Rollins and Jordan for the tag titles. So that's fun. And then The Miz shows up and says that him and Maurice are going to be in a new unscripted series on USA Network, which is true. But Miz is going to get an IC title rematch at Raw 25. So there you go.
Yeah, it looks like Miz is going to be the one to take it off of Dickhead, so that'll be cool.
One of my favorite segments of all time when The Miz finds out that Asuka's his partner for the mixed match challenge, and then they just hug, and Miz is so happy because he knows he's got the killer.
Great segment, yeah. Have you seen the one with Sami Zayn and Becky Lynch?
Oh, that was great. That was great.
Oh god, did you ever watch Arrested Development?
No, but I know I need to watch it because everybody talks about it all the time.
Okay, yeah. There's a character on there who always shows up in incognito named Gene Parmesan, and that's exactly what happened. Our reader Dimitri ended up tweeting me that, and I just thought it was the greatest observation because it's 110% true. Also, watch Arrested Development. Get on it.
It's on my list. Alexa Bliss enters Asuka's locker room and said, you know, you might have beat me last week, you know, but your luck's about to run out. And then she said that she wouldn't want to be Asuka when her best friend Nia Jax finds out what Asuka called her. Then we have Sheamus and Cesaro against Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews with Dana Brooke as the modern day Alexandra York. And Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews get the win over Sheamus and Cesaro, and they celebrate like they've won the world title.
Yeah, they. I mean, for them, wouldn't that be it?
I think so.
I mean, fuck.
Do you know what? Titus O'Neil, Apollo Crews, and Dana Brooke have done so much with so little that I kind of am happy for them. They got a wee win.
No, I have zero issues with this. And a lot of people were like, oh, this is fucking bullshit. It doesn't matter. Nobody's even going to remember it in a week. I'm taking the Vince McMahon approach with this. None of it matters. Just forget about it.
Up next, we have Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. Heyman says there's a credo in the business called old school and that they have a lot of respect for that. But they also believe in going forward, and he's going to call himself a hypocrite because he thinks his old school would be the traditional historic nature of promoting was one challenger would step up and can you beat the champion. But now, you know, Brock Lesnar wouldn't even need to lose his title. Heyman said that, you know, Lesnar took Kane's best shot and then laughed in Kane's face. He'd do the same at the Royal Rumble. And then Kane comes out. Kane attacks Lesnar from behind. And then Kane and Lesnar brawl. Braun Strowman shows up. And Braun Strowman basically throws rope against a grid and then pulls the grid over Lesnar and Kane.
Let's clarify. It was a fucking grappling hook.
He puts a grappling hook on maybe like a 25, 35 foot grid.
Yeah. It was like the lighting grid, yeah.
And then Lesnar's trying to get up, but he's in like a... They're trying to put him in an ambulance, and he's like, Paul, I don't want to go. And Heyman's trying to convince him. I love that. It was almost like if like Lesnar sat down, they give him sushi, and he's like, Paul, I don't like sushi. And he's out to care.
It made my night. I loved it. This made the segment, him just going, Paul, I don't want to go. I was just like, oh my God.
So good. So yeah, I thought the segment was really fun. I liked Braun Strowman wrecking things is my favorite thing in the world, so I was happy to see more of it.
Yeah, for sure. Really fun.
Kane needs to go on a diet. That's all I'm saying. He really
does.
Yeah,
no, this Kane, he's got a gut like me, pal. It's not pretty.
Samoa Joe takes on Rhino. He beats him with ease, and then afterwards he does a promo where he says that, you know, he's going to be in the Royal Rumble match and 29 men are going to get thrown out. And then when Charlie Caruso mentions John Cena, he says that when it comes to his career, Cena's a name he'll never forget, and that Joe's going to be Cena's going to be the first man that Joe eliminates at the Royal Rumble. So Joe has got his eyes set on John Cena. And I know Joe has a little bit of an injury, but hopefully he'll be clear for the Rumble. But Samoa Joe's just a delight on all fronts.
Yeah, no, he's the delight. I absolutely love Joe. This was my favorite promo of the whole thing. I thought that Joe was just brilliant here. Really, really awesome stuff here from Joe. And have you heard an update about his injury or no?
I heard it's something to do with his foot, and it's something that like it could be he just needs to rest for 2 weeks and then he'll be fine, or it could be that he is out for like 6 weeks, but he won't miss WrestleMania. It's just
will he miss the Rumble?
It's 50-50. I don't know.
Okay.
Hopefully
if I had
not.
To take a guess, yeah, if I had to take a guess, I would say that he will not, because he is a tough mamma Mick Jamma.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bray Wyatt worked his Undertaker match with, and his ankle was fucked at WrestleMania, so...
Yeah.
There's ways to have Joe in there for, like, 10 minutes, do what you need to do, and not have it be too prolonged.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fucking Royal Rumble, you know what I mean?
Up next, Alexa Bliss is talking to Nia Jax. Alexa Bliss basically tries to tell Nia Jax that Asuka said something about her. She whispers it to Nia Jax, who gets upset, and then she comes back and says, "Do you speak Japanese?" And Alexa Bliss is like, "No." And she was like, "Well, Asuka doesn't speak English," and walks away. What was this?
What's so stupid about that?
Asuka speaks English!
Yeah, she was just on there speaking English with the Miz promo. So what the fuck? I like, her English isn't great, but she... Kenny, whenever you're learning a new language or, you know, anything like that, you know, it doesn't matter how well-versed you are in it or anything like that. What is the first thing that you try to learn? You try to say fuck in another language. So, you know, the idea that Asuka would not know how to say fuck or any other nasty words, just ridiculous to me. I don't buy that for a second.
It was stupid. But then Asuka comes out for her match, and as she's posing on the ropes, Nia Jax runs in and performs like an electric chair thing on her, does a somersault splash, and Nia Jax is sort of smiling as Asuka's selling it in the ring. I like the idea that they're selling that these are the two women that have a shot, really, at anything, because anybody else beating up Asuka, I'd probably have an issue with. But with Nia, I'm kind of like, you can't just, it can't just be about Asuka. Nia needs to get something too, so like, I don't mind the two of them doing that. Now they're going to have a match next week, which Asuka, I mean... It's interesting because, like, are they just setting up that Asuka's not going to win the Rumble? Or is she going to win the Rumble? I mean, because people have said that she didn't. She was eliminated from Battle Royals in NXT. So I guess, how do you quantify the streak?
If they end up throwing her out at the Rumble, they'll just act like that didn't matter or didn't happen. That's just the way that they operate with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think Asuka and Nia Jax, they're the two most dominant women on Raw, so it makes sense to kind of have them having an issue going into this. What did you think of the idea of Nia laying out Asuka and it leading to a match next week?
I'm lukewarm on it, if I'm going to be honest, because for the past month or two, we've seen Nia Jax fawn over Enzo Amore, so to say she's a monster, that's just not true. She's no longer a monster. She's a she is a bit in a comedy segment, which is great. I enjoy the comedy segment. It's very fun. But I feel it's also a waste of Nia Jax. I feel like you could have done that comedy segment with Tamina Snuka instead, Kenny. I feel like Tamina Snuka would be more more fitting for a comedy segment than Nia Jax. But what do I know?
I guess we'll see where it goes. Then we got the main event. It was Balor, Gallows and Anderson against Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins and Jason Jordan. The match goes about 15 minutes. And the story at the end is that Jordan is too overzealous. He's trying to help Rollins to his feet. And then Rollins pushes Jordan aside, gets a dropkick from Balor, who then shoves Jordan off the ring apron. And then Finn hits a coup de grace on Seth Rollins for the win. 15 minutes. So before we get to the post-match angle, what did you make of the Balor Club getting the win over the Champions Club, whatever they're called?
Oh, huge. This was cool. If the Balor Club would have lost, I think that would have just been a horrible, horrible mistake. They had to win here, I thought.
Yeah, they needed it.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's... No, for sure. For sure. In fact, I was waiting for the pseudo Shield to win, despite all of their dysfunctions, and I was going to have a conniption fit. I was just going to be like, "The fuck!" Like, I was just. Have you ever, Kenny, just been sitting there waiting for the other boot to fall, and you're just sitting there, just fucking steaming in your own shit, just sitting there tapping your foot, watching sort of like, all right, yeah, just get it over with. We all know it's coming.
WrestleMania 32 main event, Roman Reigns beating Triple H. I was in the arena. Imagine being in an arena where you're like, I don't care.
Yeah. No. I mean, I've been there. I did attend WrestleMania.
At least you liked the opponent. Fuck's So after the match, Reigns and Jordan are kind of getting on at each other, and then The Miz shows up, runs Jason Jordan at the post. The Miz and the Miztourage end up holding up Reigns. Skull-crushing finale, triple powerbomb, and kind of sets us up for Reigns and Miz in 2 weeks. What did you think of the angle to close the show?
Kind of fun. You know, it didn't, like, blow me away or anything, but at the same time, it was really cool to see Jason Jordan in there with these guys sort of screwing things up. Adds another dimension, a new depth to it. Do you think the Bar are going to get the titles back at Royal Rumble?
I think they might, yeah. I think that might be the end of Rollins and Jordan. Could be.
I would like for this to be a quick thing to where it's just like, no, this didn't work out, as opposed to them making it work.
Yeah, I have no desire to see them make it work, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I mean, they very well could turn that around and, you know, make it work. But yeah, for me, I don't know.
It was also nice to see The Miz kind of, you know, show up and be a bit of a player again on the first night.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought this was a fun Raw, to be honest, overall. I'm going to give it like a 7 out of 10. I thought it was pretty fun. The Asuka, so the Nia Jax Alexa Bliss promo was stupid. Cedric Alexander, I will pay for him to go to acting class. Because nothing can be worse than what he did on this show. But I thought overall there was some good angles, good fun stuff. They're leading into a fun period with Raw 25 and the Rumble, so 7 out of 10 for me. What say you on the score?
For this guy, I think this was more of like a middling Raw for me. It didn't go as slow as I thought it would, though. I think I will go with a 6 out of 10 on this. So middling stuff, but didn't go at a snail's pace. Let's not forget how terrible that women's tag match was at the very start, though. I'm so sick of seeing this stuff just all the time, Kenny. Can't we just get some fucking reprieve from this, please? Just for a little bit?
God, I hope so. But to play us out, ladies and gentlemen, Barry Manilow is here with Mandy. And if he comes to your door, do not let him in. David, where can people find you on Twitter?
They can yell at me at Zoopsoul, but, you know, I find that most people don't yell at me, Kenny. Most people love me. I don't know if you knew that or not. In fact, I've been told that I am the lifeblood of Inside the Ropes and that I deserve a raise. Have you heard that?
No, I've not. And I will continue to not listen to that.
Well, I mean, that's your loss, you know. Gonna have to split up from you and be Outside the Ropes, starring David McCutcheon. It's going to be the spinoff.
Somebody messaged me. Somebody pointed me out to something that somebody had posted the Jericho interview and posted it as from Between the Ropes, which angers me on two fronts, because A, there's already a podcast called Between the Ropes, and B,
right,
like, the Inside the Ropes logo is on the full fucking video. So anyway, but wait, give us your Twitter handle one more time. Come on.
Zoopsoul, ZOOPSOUL, ain't I great? Yes, I am. Oh.
You can get me at KennyMC1985, the brand Inside_the Ropes. You can also get the last remaining general admission tickets for London and Manchester for Shawn Michaels at InsideTheRopes.co.uk. I am not going to be in the Raw Rundown next week. Sondra will be filling in for me with David J. McCutcheon. But David and I will be back 2 weeks, or just under 2 weeks from now, where we will be talking about Raw 25 in detail, live perspective, TV perspective, and hopefully they did a good job.
I cannot wait. And they will have to do a good job if it's going to hold our attention span for 5 hours, Kenny.
You know it's not really 5 hours, right?
It's not really 5 hours. They're talking like it's 5 hours.
Apparently, it is only 3 hours, thank God.
Where did the 5 hours come from? Because I saw that officially from WWE, I thought.
Apparently it was because there was because there's like two shows and it's emanating from two places. It was a mix-up, but WWE apparently were reached for comment and they have said it is only a three-hour show.
Okay, well, that's good.
I know. I mean, I've got the seven-hour WrestleMania to look forward to in April. So. But anyway,
just wait until it becomes like a weekend event and it's numerous nights, Kenny.
Jeez. They should totally do it. We've talked about this before. Anyway,
yes.
Here's Barry Manilow. We'll be back soon. Thank you for all your support, everybody. Bye bye.
Take care, everybody. Don't do drugs.
Face through a window, crying in the night. The night goes into morning, just another day. Happy people pass my way. Looking in their eyes, I see.